ברוכים הבאים לפודקאסט הכדור הכתום. אני סגיר רפאל, והיום יש לנו אורח מיוחד מארצות הברית, בריין אורינגר, סקאוט שעבד בעבר ב-NBA. הפודקאסט היום יהיה באנגלית, ואנחנו נשתדל את ההיילייטים להכניס לתוך התיאור בעברית. פתיח ומתחילים. Hello, Brian.
How are you?
Good, and you?
I'm good. Appreciate you having me.
Well, we're trying to do new things here. And of course, there are so many basketball persons in the US, not so many here. And we wanted to get some impressions from someone who lives in the US, who covers the NBA. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my background's a little bit unique in that I actually worked in the NBA for a long time. I spent 7 seasons working in the league. For 6 years, I was with the Washington Wizards. Four of those seasons, I was their head video coordinator. So that meant I traveled with the team. I was pretty much worked closely with the coaching staff on all the game plans, all the film, all the player development stuff. That's the position that Eric Spoelstra started in for the Miami Heat. So you might have heard of that, as a lot of coaches came up through the film room. And then after that, I did one season as a regional advanced scout for the Hawks and Raptors. That job, you're pretty much just scouting the teams that they're going to play soon. So like if they're going to play the Bulls coming up, I'd go and watch the Bulls for them, make sure we had all the Bulls play calls, we're prepared for all the plays that they're going to run. And then now for the last couple of years, like you said, I've been on the media side on Twitter, YouTube, and a podcast, all at Scout with Brian, and Brian is with a Y.
Okay. I will give the Twitter link in the description, and I guess they can find your YouTube channel from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, that's perfect.
Okay. So we have a small tradition here. We start every podcast with the moment of the week. So what was the best moment in the NBA this week for you?
Obviously the trade deadline was a big deal, so happy to talk about that as well. But I want to also give a quick shout out to Russell Westbrook's stat line last night that was just unbelievable. If you saw, he had 35 points, 21 assists, 14 rebounds in a Wizards win over the Pacers without Bradley Beal. So he just continues to amaze and just, is the hardest playing player in the NBA to me and just an absolute wrecking ball. So that's that line, 35, 21, and 14 was just unreal. So that was probably my most incredible moment, but definitely the trade deadline is was a lot of fun and is up there as well.
Okay. I'm happy to hear you're a Westbrook fan, so we will have something to argue about. For me, my best moment of the week was the moment that Adrian Wojnarowski. It's such a hard name, I'm Israeli, so I'm supposed to have the ability to pronounce it, but
say Woj. That's what we say. Just Woj.
When Woj tweeted the Nikola Vucevic trade, and that just opened the floodgates, because up to that moment it was very dry. So I really like the excitement, and I don't think there is a lot in the business side of the NBA that compares to the trade deadline and draft day. So
yeah,
we're going to start, of course, with the Washington Wizards. But I don't want to talk I don't want to talk about Russell Westbrook, because I want to ask you about your opinion about Danny Avdia, about his rookie season. We have to talk about him, so let's get it out of the way.
Yeah, sure. No, I think Danny's had a good rookie season. I understand he's you know, dealing with sky high expectations. And obviously, you know, the whole country thinks he's incredible and has really high aspirations and beliefs in him. But, you know, if you look at the average ninth overall pick in an NBA draft, to be playing 22 minutes a game as a rookie, to be averaging, you know, 6 points, almost five rebounds, over an assist, you know, and shooting the ball pretty well from three, almost 34%. All those things are pretty solid, you know. So he's not playing like the superstar he was there just yet. But that's normal, you know. He's not Luka Doncic. He's not LeBron James. He's not going to come over and be an all-star right away. But I've been impressed with what I've seen. I think he plays, you know, pretty physical. He plays smart basketball. He's in the right spots defensively. You know, a lot of people have the complaint, like, why doesn't he handle the ball more? And, you know, he showed in Israel he can do all those things. But, you know, when you're on a team with the leading scorer in the NBA and Bradley Beal, as well as Russell Westbrook, that's just not how the NBA works. You're not going to get a tremendous amount of chances to handle the ball yourself, because those guys are superstars and they have the ball for a reason. So, you know, Denny's showing that, yeah, he's going to have to become a little bit more consistent of a spot up shooter. And that's, you know, super important to make it in the NBA. And, he shot the ball, I think, better than a lot of people expected, because the one question mark on him coming in kind of was that 3-point shot. So to me, I think he's had a perfectly solid rookie year. I think the people in DC, the coaches and, you know, whoever I've talked to is really happy with him. Think he's a phenomenal kid, a phenomenal person. But, you know, you just have to have some patience and realize that, you know, these things don't happen overnight. And he's, 20 years old. And, you know, by year two, year three, you know, you'll have a better feel for exactly how much he can do in the NBA.
Okay. It's, you know, he was interviewed last week in a podcast, and he said basically the same. He said he's not Luka. So we can't expect him to be Luka. He also mentioned LaMelo Ball, which is had a very good rookie season until his injury. And that he's a different player. But I do wonder if the fit is good, because there are two things that Denny is doing very good and Washington doesn't excel. The first one is moving the ball, which doesn't really... the ball doesn't move very much in Washington. And the second is the defense, which is also not very good. So it's hard to be a good defender on a bad defensive team.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm far from the biggest Scott Brooks fan in the world. I mean, I personally don't think he's a very good coach. I've spent a year with him.
No argument here.
Yeah, I spent a year with him in D.C. and I was not very impressed by him. And, you know, the team's basically gotten worse for all of his 5 years there. So I don't think he's, you know, very long for this world. I'd be shocked if he's back next season. So maybe we can see what Denny does over, you know, like you said, a more defensive minded coach, a coach maybe that also moves the ball a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, you know, those comparisons, like you said, he's not Luka, he's not LaMelo, and those guys are point guards. Those guys are guys that can have the ball in their hands, you know, the entire game. I think Denny, you know, you hope he can be like a, you know, a little bit of Gallinari, maybe a little bit of Turgaloo. Like those guys, certainly, you know, as a point forward, as like a 3-4, you can handle the ball a little bit and occasionally, you know, run some pick and rolls, but. Again, you know, Bradley Beal's an unbelievable scorer, an unbelievable pick and roll player, and Russell Westbrook, you know, he needs the ball in his hands a lot. So it does make a little bit of sense that, yeah, Denny right now, you know, in addition to having Rui, he's having a pretty good second season. You know, Denny's not the focal point offensively, but yeah, maybe once they, you know, get some better shooting, guy, you know, like a point guard that can make shots, which isn't Russ's strong point. And maybe Denny will be able to, you know, show his strength, show his basketball IQ a little bit more. But at the same time, yeah, he's not a point guard. He's not LaMelo. He's not Luka. So I think he just needs to continue to play with a lot of toughness to work on his spot up shooting. And, you know, the having a good IQ, knowing how to play help defense, I think those things already are probably his best assets, and those will help him stick around in the league for a long time.
I just hope he doesn't develop bad habits, you know, because when I see Roy Hachimura, which is a very good player, but sometimes you see when he gets the ball, he immediately looks for the shot because he doesn't get the ball that much.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny, even though he doesn't get the ball, he moves the ball, you know, even if he's open on the three-point line and there's another shooter next to him, he will pass it.
Yeah, no, he's unselfish. And that's, you know, like you said, I think it is hard for a young player to balance and figure out, you know, when am I supposed to shoot? When am I supposed to keep the ball moving? Especially because, you know, like we mentioned, the Wizards don't really value defense. They don't emphasize defense enough. And I think they're, what, like the fastest paced team in the league. And in my opinion, that's not smart if you want to be a defensive team, you know, if you don't want to be the worst defensive team in the league, just about. So they play so fast. They want everybody taking, you know, quick threes, quick shots. And yeah, that's not, you know, really Denny's makeup. That's not the way that he knows how to play. So I think he's done a good job, you know, keeping the ball moving, making the right basketball play, like you said, but yeah, you also don't want him to, you know, just start chucking up shots or feeling like he has to, you know, shoot more to stay on the floor. And I think, you know, even though, like I said, I'm not Brooks's biggest fan, I think he appreciates Denny's IQ and willingness to move the ball. You know, I don't think anybody's, pressuring him to be, you know, taking a ton more shots than he is or anything like that.
Do you think that under a different coach, with Russell Westbrook still in Washington, that they can move the ball more?
Yeah, you know, I think it's funny because obviously offensively they're not terrible. I mean, I think, you know, they've been like the best team in the league getting to the free throw line, at least for the last couple months. I know in offensive rating, they still do pretty well. But yeah, you know, I like I said, you watch a lot of teams in the NBA and every other coach is calling out a ton of plays. He's commanding their defense. He's telling players, you know, exactly what he wants. And Scott Brooks, you know, to me, and I've heard a lot of people say this criticism, kind of just looks like he's just like watching the game. You know, he doesn't really do a whole lot out there. So yeah, I think hopefully, you know, that there's definitely room for improvement. And I think the biggest thing a new coach would have to bring in is first that defensive mindset, that defensive disposition, because, you know, you can't make the playoffs or being one of the bottom two or three defensive teams in the league. So their defense has just been too laughable for so much of the season. I think, you know, if they can establish at least a middle of the pack defense, then yeah, maybe you do slow the offense down a little bit. You move the ball a little more and maybe that'll, you know, lead to Denny showing what he could do a little bit more on that end as well.
Okay. What do you think about Troy Brown comments after his trade to Chicago? He said that he played point guard in his college career and he expected to play in the NBA backup point guard, but for some reason, they put him in the power forward spot.
I didn't see those comments. I mean, I think to me, he was always kind of a backup 2-3, a backup, you know, shooting guard, small forward type who, in a best case scenario, maybe could handle the ball a little bit and make some plays as a secondary playmaker, but I don't think he proved to be anywhere near good enough to be, you know, an NBA point guard. I don't think many people had really projected him that way. So it's, you know, definitely the Wizards didn't do a great job developing him by any means. And I was kind of shocked how much he seemed to almost get like worse every season. But, you know, most importantly, most glaringly, at least, I think he just was a bad draft pick. I don't think he was worthy of, what was he, 13th or wherever they took him. You know, I just don't see a tremendous amount of NBA talent. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he does maybe in Chicago with a bigger opportunity. But I don't think personally that he's going to be anything special as an NBA player.
You keep talking about the draft pick. So I have a question from the audience. Mm-hmm. There's Yair here from Israel is asking, what's your explanation for someone like Tyrese Halliburton going 12? You know, and we can go back, and there are so many examples like Donovan Mitchell and Bam Adebayo and all these other guys.
Yeah, no, it's I just say it's a really inexact science drafting. You know, it's hindsight's always 20/20, and it's easy after the fact to look at guys and be shocked. You know, how did Fred VanVleet go undrafted? How was Jokic a second round pick? You know. You can go on and on, but to me, I think a big part of it is that a lot of these guys are motivated by, you know, by being drafted lower, by feeling like they were snubbed. You know, Isaiah Thomas always
Draymond Green, you know, keeps the emotion till this day. So
yeah, exactly. Isaiah kept remembered the 59 picks that went above him. You know, Jokic, like I said, he was a second round pick because he was, you know, 100 pounds overweight at the time. And he, you know, who could have predicted that he'd become so unbelievably motivated then and totally reform his body? And, you know, VanVleet,
he was a great player even when he was fat.
Yeah.
You know, this year it shows us how good he can be. But last year and the year before, he was also very good.
Oh, for sure. No, in the NBA, absolutely. I was talking about, you know, when
when he was drafted, he was quite heavy.
Yeah. So yeah,
and unknown, very unknown. Exactly.
Yeah, no. So some of those guys that are top 5 or 10 picks, sometimes that leads to complacency. You know, sometimes you're the number one pick, like an Anthony Bennett or something. You think that you're God's.
Yeah, I think Anthony Bennett wasn't very good. You know, it has nothing to do with the motivation.
I think it's always a little bit of both. I you know, there's definitely some talent issues and some, you know, he was undersized and all those things. But if you have enough talent to be drafted number one overall, he had a lot of talent. I think he just, you know, he also had some discipline issues. He didn't work super hard. So
yeah, he didn't succeed in Europe also. So
yeah, it's a mix of a lot of things, but I will say I was a big fan of Halliburton, and I was pretty shocked that he went 12th or whatever, because I think I had him as third or fourth on my board. So definitely, you know, the Knicks, a couple of those teams are, you know, going to have to really think about that one for a long time.
Yeah, and it's amazing that the Kings were able not to screw it up. You know, usually they're the one who's screwing it up, so.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about Atlanta. They had a good run after they fired their head coach and appointed Nate McMillan. And that run is over after they lost three of the last four. But there is something interesting for me, because I projected at the beginning of the season that they will trade John Collins away, because it doesn't seem they want to pay him. Why did they keep him, and what's the plan? What are they going to do?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's really going to depend what he shows them the rest of the season. And if he's able to convince them that he's, you know, a max type level player. And I think, like you said, that they still have some question marks about that. I think there's some teams probably that, you know, that think he could be worth that. But as we saw at the deadline, you know, I don't think anybody stepped up with an incredible offer because some teams are still unsure, you know, and I think that's mainly because, you know, he's definitely an exciting player. He can catch lobs. He's a super athlete. He can make some highlight reel plays. But He's also at times, you know, complained about his role. He's complained about his touches, how he's being used in the offense. You know, to me, I don't like guys like that, generally speaking. You know, you never heard guys like Kevin Garnett complain about their touches. If they weren't getting enough touches, they would go get more offensive rebounds. They would screen and roll hard as heck. They would, you know, play harder defensively and create offense from that. So I think what the Hawks really want to see is Collins stop caring as much about, you know, his own stats, his own scoring, and be more about just making winning plays, playing tremendous defense, doing, you know, doing all the little things. So I think McMillan's starting to get through to him a little bit more about those things. And he's definitely playing a little bit better as of late. But again, I think the thing with him is all just mental and his mentality. And if he has the right mentality, then he can be a max type player. But if he lets some of those selfish instincts kind of creep back in, then, you know, then I don't know. Maybe they do let him walk, but we'll see. I think a lot of it, again, is up to what happens the rest of this season.
How do you compare him to Greg Monroe? Because a lot of the things you said were right about Monroe also. And there is a small problem, you know, because Monroe was a great player. He was a double-double every game and working hard and everything, but he doesn't give you the W.
Yeah, you know, you got to be careful with paying some of these bigs. You know, even we saw, I mean, Andre Drummond has had some massive contracts, and he, you know, puts up incredible stats and rebounds out the wazoo, and is, you know, does a lot of good things, but he's never really contributed to winning basketball. So, yeah, you know, Monroe the same way, was kind of, you know, was a good passer. He was high IQ, but a little bit lazy, you know. Collins, I guess, obviously a better athlete. He's, you know, more of an above the rim player than him. But yeah, you know, it's like that Yogi Berra quote, that 90% of the game's half mental. I'm a huge believer in that in basketball too. You know, a huge part of the game is just honestly mindset and you know, being emotionally stable and doing what the coaches ask you to do. And there's some guys that just, quite frankly, you know, don't really do that. They're not the same guy on a night to night basis. They, you know, are prone to outbursts. I mean, look at what's happening in Toronto, even this season. I love Pascal Siakam, and I think he's an incredible player, but he's already, I think, twice had suspensions or fines or whatever for, you know, getting into it.
Arguing with his coach.
Yeah. Cussing out Nick Nurse, you know, leaving the court early, all those things. And he's showing he just hasn't been able to handle adversity well. He hasn't been able to handle losing well. So it's a tough job. It's not easy. It's a super emotional sport, a supercharged, you know, locker room. I, as somebody that was in the locker room for four seasons, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I saw, you know, coaches fighting, players fighting, our team almost feel like things were about to fall apart. And, you know, sometimes they're really bad and you don't recover. And sometimes, you know, the leadership, guys like Paul Pierce, who we had in D.C., are able to keep things together and keep everybody on the same page. But all those things, all the intangibles, all the things that don't show up in the stat sheet, those are really important. And I think those are what Atlanta wants to see John Collins do better with.
Atlanta is I believe, is a Trae Young team. You know, they gambled on him. I have an argument here with a friend who says they are very disappointed, and I don't think so, because Trae Young is basically as expected. I think he's even better than what we expected when they drafted him. Great shooter, great point guard. He developed a very nice floater, and he gets to the line. Everything. I mean, this is what they expected when they drafted him, you know. But on the other hand, you have Luka, which is an MVP candidate. So,
yeah, it's tough to live up to that, you know. So I think he'll always, unfortunately, you know, maybe get a little more criticism than he deserves, because he's always going to be, you know, compared to Luka for life, which is really, really hard to live up to. But I agree. I mean, I think he's, you know, I think he's a really good player. I think he, you know, obviously is an incredible long distance shooter, and has good playmaking instincts for a point guard and has a good floater game, like you said, can do a lot of things well. You know, I think also with him too, there's some of those, you know, things that still need to be proven. Like I think with Pierce, I think he was a little too reckless in terms of, you know, giving him the green light from just about anywhere. And some of the shots that he'd take were just kind of, you know, kind of ridiculous. I don't mind the occasional logo shot and the occasional, you know, 40 foot or whatever, but you can't be taking, you know, three of those a game or whatever. So I think he also needs to just understand better, you know, try to get the absolute best shot he can on every possession, whether that's for him or for a teammate, and, you know, improve his basketball IQ a little bit. But I agree with you that I think he is a really good player, and, you know, I don't think Atlanta's disappointed in him or anything, but yeah.
So what I'm hearing from you is that what they needed was a seasonal, a more experienced coach, someone like Nick McMillan.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, no, I definitely thought that was a great move midseason. I'd love to see Nate keep the job long term. I was still shocked he was fired by Indiana, and think they're probably regretting doing that because they're not, you know, doing too hot this season. And Nate, you know, he had some playoff failings and wasn't incredible in the playoffs, but you know, it's hard enough just getting there. I mean, winning 45, 50 games every year, that's, people take that for granted sometimes. As you know, you see Tibbs get fired in Minnesota after they make the playoffs for the first time in 15 years or whatever. I mean, look how things have gone downhill since he was there. So sometimes,
yeah, but the situation there was very bad.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't good in the front office for sure. I understood firing him as the GM, but you know, they fired him the year after making the playoffs, and they were 19-21 at that point. So why you would do that to hire, you know, Ryan Saunders?
We're still complaining about the firing of David Blatt. So,
yeah, well,
and he was 31 and 10 or 31 and 11, and he led the East. So,
yeah, I don't know about that one, but yeah, it's a tough job, very, very unstable profession.
Do you think Travis Shelnick will be there next year? Because I think it's his head on the line.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, no, it's definitely, especially with some of the draft picks he's had recently. I was not a fan of Okongwu at all. Certainly, they should have taken probably Haliburton too. You know, Reddish is looking like a bust. Yeah, I don't know. I think, again, it'll depend on do they make the playoffs ultimately? Do they compete in the playoffs? But he definitely – it's not a sure thing to return, and I definitely have big question marks about him as a talent evaluator.
He said that he was the one who picked Steph Curry. So,
yeah, everybody's got their claim to fame, and you know, a broken clock can still be right twice a day, but
yeah. he tried to build the Warriors when he went to Atlanta, and he, you know, the Warriors are a one-time miracle, so you can't rebuild it.
Yeah, no, and you know, as good as Trey is, I mean, the things we talked about, yeah, he's a pretty good point guard, he's a pretty good shooter, all those things, but you know, there were some people that, and maybe there were some people in Atlanta's front office that legitimately thought, you know, that he is a Steph Curry type talent, that they'd be able to use him, you know, running off screens and coming off of constant movement and shooting, you know, those shots like Steph. And you know, he doesn't really do a whole lot of that. He's not great giving up the ball and you know, flying around like Steph does. So, yeah, like you said, those things are hard to cultivate. It's not easy to play like the Warriors, but you know, it's definitely, if there's anything Trey's disappointing at it, I thought personally, at least, that he, you know, would be able to play a little bit like Steph does in terms of, like I said, flying like JJ Redick, playing off ball screens. You know, he hasn't really shown a tremendous amount of that.
And to be honest, Atlanta, you know, Golden State worked a lot to cover Curry's defensive lack of defensive stance, and Atlanta didn't do a very good job there.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a huge thing too, and you know, it is also on Trey a little bit too. You know, like you said, Golden State had some great defenders in Iguodala and Draymond and you know, Bogut, guys they surrounded him with, but Steph also worked unbelievably.
Yeah, he
works
very hard, but he's still a mediocre defender because of his size.
Right. Right. And Trey, you know, Trey has that same size, but he's not even close to being a mediocre defender yet. You know,
yeah, so I think he's more close to the bottom of the list.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question from Dror, my boss.
Mm-hmm.
So let's try to answer. Could it be that the Hawks are not using John Collins the right way? And can he be a good defender?
He definitely can be a good defender. You know, like I said, that part is just all about, again, being locked in mentally, understanding, you know, where he's supposed to be and just studying the game, communicating all those things. In terms of using him correctly, that's a good question. I mean, to me, I've kind of always thought that his natural position was to be a five. And obviously with Capella there, he's not going to play a ton of that five. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if maybe he went to a team where, you know, they use him like Sacramento's using Rashawn Holmes and just having him roll hard and dunk everything and, you know, just command the defense. Not that Holmes has done that all that well, but I think that if he got to play as a full-time starting five, maybe, you know, maybe he would look better than being a four man who's, you know, not an incredible shooter, not an incredible ball handler, not an amazing passer. Those things are super important to play the four in the NBA. And it's also hard to guard, you know, some of those guys that can really, you know, the Giannis's that are basically playing the four and you got to guard them off the dribble. I mean, that's a tough job. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm obviously he's a talented player. He puts up big numbers at times, but I do still personally have a lot of questions about, you know, how much of a winning player he is. And it wouldn't shock me if that's part of Atlanta's hesitancy about really paying him as well.
Okay. I really hope Atlanta will be in the playoffs because I think they are, have a very nice young core. And the East is very weak. So if they're not making the playoffs this year, then that's a problem, I think.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Let's continue, please, to the trade deadline. Who are your big winners and losers?
One of my big winners definitely is a little bit of a sleeper one that, you know, not a ton of people have raved about what they did, but I was a big fan of what the Mavericks did actually in terms of really trading nothing of any real value to get JJ Redick and, you know, Nicolo Melli. You know, I think JJ obviously is still hurt and hasn't made his debut there yet, but he's an unbelievable shooter and just a huge, huge weapon, especially for a guy like Luka, you know, for a team like Dallas in the playoffs. I think he can kind of duplicate what Seth Curry gave them a little bit. So to get a shooter like him at the deadline, again, without really giving up much is a big deal. And Melli had a brutal season for the Pelicans, but as a rookie last year, I know an older rookie, but he looked really good. You know, he looked like a solid stretch four with good basketball IQ, good team defender, you know, good shooter. So obviously he's got to get some of that confidence back. And, you know, he's not a sure thing by any means, but I think he definitely can end up being a part of that, being a part of that rotation and helping them, you know, in the playoffs this season.
But you think they're the big winners? Because over here nobody talked about the trade. Even one of our commentators is a Dallas fan, and even he didn't look about didn't say this trade was a great success, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, again,
it's really on the fringe.
It is, and that's why I said, to me, I think it's underrated, and I think it's one that not many people are saying. But, you know, James Johnson wasn't making a big impact for him, for them. A one do, you know, didn't play.
I didn't understand why they brought him in. So,
yeah, so you know, again, I just think they basically added two really solid rotation players who both have the ability to be phenomenal shooters. You know, shooting's incredibly important in the NBA, obviously, and you can never get enough. You know, look
yeah,
at
they
Utah.
Missed. They gave up the shooting in the summer, and then this is what they brought. And
exactly,
you can see that the lack of shooting in their starting five was affecting everything.
Yeah, exactly. And so now, you know, to be able to still keep Josh Richardson, the guy who kind of brings a little more toughness, brings more defense than Curry did, but also have a shooter of his caliber, if not better, in J.J. Redick. Yeah, you know, that's why I'm a. If they're healthy, if they're able to play, I do think that could end up being really helpful to them.
I think they're still very dependent on Paul Zingis' knees.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's still $1 million question. But, you know,
a $20 million question.
True. Miami definitely has to be mentioned as well, obviously. You know, I think they played that Oladipo thing perfectly to, you know, pretty much call Houston's bluff and end up getting him, you know, for next to nothing also.
I don't know. Kelly Olynyk looks very good in Houston.
yeah, but, you know, also signing, you know, Trevor Ariza.
Yeah,
you know,
Pat Riley did a great job. You know, yeah. They always credit Pat Riley, but I'm not really sure that he's actually managing the team.
He's not the GM, right? I think it's Andy Ellsberg, whatever.
Nobody knows.
Something.
Nobody knows. But, Pat Riley is the only one they know.
Right. In terms of losers, let's think. You know, you mentioned that I do like the pairing of LaVine and Vucevic together. And, you know, I think they'll definitely be pretty damn good offensively. But to me, the Bulls' problem has just always been, again, just defense and not having a defensive mindset as a team. And, you know, LaVine's a pretty poor defender to start off with. And now, you know, Vucevic, as amazing as he is offensively, I think he's one of the most gifted offensive bigs maybe ever. You know, he doesn't guard the rim. He doesn't.
He's
really
not even the best Nikola in the NBA. So come on.
True. But yeah, no, he's not a good rim protector. He's not a very plus defender. And you know, I think they've kind of gotten abused so far with that group. So
I think they jumped the gun because I'm looking at this long term and I don't really understand what the plan is. You have Vucevic who's 30 and you have LaVine is 26 and then you have Patrick Williams who's 19. So what's right. The timeline here? Where are you gonna put all your chips in?
Yeah, so. No, and they traded basically three first round picks.
Yeah.
You know, to get him, and you know if
they can still finish in the lottery and the pick will be 10th, 11th.
Right. Yeah, if that move propelled you to like the top three or four of the East, then I get it. But the fact that they're not even a sure thing to, you know, to make the playoffs even now with it, I think they're a loser to me.
And they also committed to Zach LaVine now because. You know, they basically told him, this is your team. We're going to pay you all the money you want next year when he finishes his contract.
Right, which is still a questionable thing in my mind. Other loser, I don't know. Who were you thinking?
Houston, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, they're probably the obvious other one. That's going to go down.
Yeah, I think they were hoping to get something out of Oladipo, and I really don't understand what they did in the James Harden trade. I mean, I understand the draft picks, and the draft picks can be very huge in 3-4 years from now when the Nets are done. But you know, you have Caris LeVert and you have Allen. I forgot the name.
Yeah, they should have taken them.
The best two players that the Nets gave up, and they went to other teams. And you knew Oladipo wasn't going to stay.
Right. Yeah, that was the biggest error, I think.
I really think Miami didn't care. You know, give us Oladipo now. We'll sign him in the summer. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and now they have, you know, they have time basically to get a free look at him, you know, to evaluate him the rest of the season. If he doesn't look super healthy for them, or, you know, doesn't play at a super high level, then they, you know, let him walk. And you know, they're no worse off because they didn't really trade anything of value to get him anyway, you know. So it's not like it hurts any of their long-term planning or potential to get, you know, get a player like Beal if he ever comes available, or Levine or whatever. So, yeah, I think Houston's probably the other big loser, like you said.
I didn't really like the Toronto move also. You know, first they kept Kyle Lowry, which they, you know, he's not going to ask for a buyout because his bird rights are the most important thing now. He can't sign on a big contract without his bird rights. He will be very limited in his choices of teams. So he's not going to get a buyout. He's going to end the season. Then what? And, you know, they didn't want to pay Norman Powell, but you want to pay Gary Trent Jr.? So both of them are finishing their contract in the summer.
Right. Yeah. And on top of that, you know, they also end up losing pretty much two rotation players because they had to make trades thinking that they were, you know, maybe going to trade Lowry, but so they trade Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas, who, you know, they're not great, but they're not nothing. They were at least reasonable parts of the rotation, and they get pretty much nothing for them.
They will have to pay Rodney Hood's salary next year, which is, you know, he was a great potential, but seems that the injuries really hurt his career.
Yeah. No, they didn't manage it great. And then, you know, Boston, I really liked getting Fournier for them, but then to go
for nothing. That's great.
Yeah, that's that great was good. But then to trade Tice for what's his name? For Mo Wagner. That made no sense. You know, that was just to save money, you know, to get under the luxury tax. I think they got, you know, it's weird to make one trade where you get a really solid player, but then you also really downgrade your, you know, maybe your starting center spot. So, as you know, some
and of I think he's better than Tristan Thompson.
Tice, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, that was very head scratching.
And I think Orlando were the big winners because they basically did what they had to do for the last 3 years. You know, they did a yard sale, and I think they got some nice assets back. Wendell Carter Jr. can be a good player, but I don't think Chicago really developed him very, very good. Yeah. I still believe he can be a good defender in the league.
Yeah. At worst, like I said, I pretty much viewed him as, you know, like I said, a third first round pick. You know, I don't know if he'd go as high as he was drafted a couple of years ago, but I, you know, if he was in the draft today, he would absolutely be valued as a, you know, top 15, top 20 type pick. So he's still
come on. He was able to make his team a good defensive team with Marvin Bagley next to him. So you have to give him credit for that. I'm talking about Duke, of course.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, who knows? But
okay. So let's continue to our last subject of the day, and that's the Lakers. Anthony Davis is still out and supposed to be back in a week or two. That's what the last update I saw. And last week they lost LeBron James for 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain, which is a very hard Well, it's not a very hard injury, but it's worse than just a normal sprain. And, you know, their situation in the West is not very good because right now they're just... Okay, so they're 5 games ahead of Dallas in the play-in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Denver and Portland have a very easy schedule and gaining some distance. And the Lakers could face the playoff without the first round advantage, home court advantage.
Yeah, no, they definitely, you know, have to find a way to stay afloat here. And, you know, I think Drummond will really help. Like I said,
he's he definitely didn't help Cleveland. And right now, the Lakers are not much better than Cleveland.
Right. He's a flawed player, but, you know, if he's got Schroeder and then eventually, you know, LeBron and guys like that throwing him the lobs instead of the, you know, the point guards he played with in Cleveland and Detroit, who were pretty terrible. You know, I think he's going to look a lot better. I think he'll remind people what a force he can be as a lob threat, as a offensive rebounder, and then just also, you know, being physical enough to block shots, help your defense. I forget who said it exactly, but there was some coach, maybe Carlisle or someone like that said, you know, he can pretty much win you one or two games in the playoffs just with his physicality, with his presence. So I think he'll definitely help. And then, you know, yeah, they just need to get back. They need to get back healthy. They got to get AD back sometime reasonably soon. You know, they got to get LeBron back probably at least within a month, maybe at worst. But yeah, I mean, we're just seeing that obviously it's a pretty weak team around him. They're not super deep. Horton Tucker is definitely talented and fun to watch, and they've got some serviceable pieces. But yeah, I mean, you take LeBron off that team and you know, just say, let's say it's AD's team, I'm not even sure they would be a playoff team, like if LeBron had, you know, missed the whole season entirely. So yeah, definitely a lot of question marks there.
I hear a lot of complaints about the buyout market, but I'm not really understanding what everybody's complaining about, because Andre Drummond will not change very much for the Lakers. They're still dependent on LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You know, Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, they're not going to move the needle. You know, the Brooklyn Nets are dependent on Kevin Durant and James Harden and Kyrie Irving. So I don't really understand why everybody's complaining. I mean, yeah, you get a player for free, but somebody cut him for a reason. He wasn't very good. LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't right. Very good. Blake Griffin wasn't very good. Andre Drummond, you know, he had huge numbers, but he didn't really influence the game.
Right. And all these guys, you just had an opportunity to trade for them if you wanted them so badly at the trade deadline. You know, Aldridge.
No, but they're not worth the money, you know, for a minimum salary. Okay, but nobody will pay them $20 million a year, or, I don't know, 34, 35, 36, what Blake earned in Detroit.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I don't know. I guess the thing that people just complain about is, you know, guys that are huge names like Blake and LaMarcus and at the end of the career, basically feeling like they, you know, need to be validated by a ring. And so they, you know, they're doing like what Malone and Payton did, you know, signing up for the Lakers to try to win a ring.
David, I guess, West like gave up his player option in Indiana was $20 million, I think. And he went and signed in San Antonio for the minimum value, for the minimum veteran minimum. So
Okay. What's
the difference?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, I don't hate it. And you know, Blake said something like, you guys were killing me all season saying that I couldn't play anymore and I wasn't any good. And now you are so outraged that I'm on Brooklyn. I mean,
he's right.
Yeah, I agree.
He can only ruin the Nets. If he's trying to be the star, then he creates problems. You know, yeah. If he takes shots from Durant and Harden, then that's a problem.
Yeah, no, and to be perfectly honest, I mean, I like.
And he's not a very good defender. And he wasn't. He was never a very good defender. So,
no, and Aldridge is terrible on that end. But I like Blake there. But to be honest, Aldridge might make it kind of too many cooks in the kitchen. Like I don't think they needed both of them, especially now that, you know, Claxton's looking like a solid rotation piece. I mean, DeAndre you know, can't play a ton, but he does kind of anchor the defense. The young kid, Reggie Perry, you know, wasn't awful. So, you know, I'm not even sure that Aldridge is really going to be able to help them. It was kind of overkill, I think, to add both of them. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I think the complaining about it is pretty silly, if you ask me.
For me, the most interesting signing was Goldie Jang. Because I think he has very good IQ, and he was just in bad teams, you know. And now in San Antonio, I really think he can thrive.
Yeah, well, let's see. I'm
not expecting him to be a double-double guy, you know, but he really can help them, and they're fighting for the playoffs, for the playing.
Yeah, but it's funny that Memphis was doing that too, you know, and they didn't really, you know, find enough value in him to you know, to keep him around. But I don't know, you know, there are definitely some people that think that. Personally, I mean, I think Drummond and Aldridge are both better players myself, but not everybody does. And I guess we'll see, especially in a culture like San Antonio, maybe Gorgie can end up thriving there and looking, you know, more valuable than Drummond and Aldridge at this point. So
as long as he doesn't hurt Yakov Pertl's stat line, because I need him in my fantasy team.
There you go.
Okay, so let's do some questions from the audience. Just two or three questions. Sure. What do you think is the mold for the future big men? Bam, Jokic. When is a bad shooting stroke a non-issue for a prospect?
Those were the same person, or those are two different?
Yeah, same person, but two questions.
So the first one was, what's like the prototypical big?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think they kind of said it, you know, you need to, I think you really have to be able to shoot, pass, and dribble. You know, like I said, the days of a five-man, obviously, just being a low-post player are pretty much done. But, you know, like even as good as Rudy Gobert is, you know, he's an outstanding defensive player. He's a great, you know, lob threat, a great screener. But, you know, the reason why I at least don't really buy Utah as a championship contender and why they usually end up, you know, falling short in the playoffs is it's hard to win when you know, you have a guy that can't score outside of 3 feet, you know, like Simmons. He has the ball at the top and nobody's guarding him. He can't really, you know, dribble. He can't really pass. So, yeah, I think those guys like Jokic, like Bam are super important, that can, you know, facilitate a lot of the offense from the high post, that can, you know, you can run a lot of the offense through them. They can shoot a little bit. At least Jokic can shoot incredibly well. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the future big. And then, the second one was about
what about you actually answered two questions, because we had a question about Utah. Are they a real contender? So you already answered that. The second question was, when is a bad shooting stroke a non-issue for a prospect, such as Isaac Okoro versus Sadiq Bey?
You know, I think... If the shooting stroke is half decent, you know, as in like Okoro's, for example, usually I think teams can, you know, can make minor tinkers enough where it's perfectly serviceable to being a solid 3-and-D guy. You know, we've seen so many guys, even that, you know, Kawhi is the first one that comes to mind, but there's been so many guys that weren't incredible college shooters by any means that have been able to at least become consistent NBA shooters. You know, obviously if you're Michael Kidd-Gilchrist or Ben Simmons, you know, then it's a totally different level of broke, which just is, you know, is not gonna work out. But you know, at the same time, I think, you know, you still see that, as much as I said that shooting is super important, and obviously it'd be great if Ben Simmons had a jumper, you know, he's still one of the most valuable players in the league. You know, he's still one of the probably top 5 to 10 guys I'd choose to build around, because you know, he makes such an incredible impact on defense, you know, passing the ball, posting up, you know, just making the right plays, playing with force. So there's a lot of ways to impact the game outside of scoring, outside of shooting. So, you know, I think sometimes we get so bogged down in, you know, can this guy shoot? Can he not shoot? And, you know, don't realize that there's a ton of ways to impact the game, even without, you know, being incredible at shooting the ball.
Okay. I have another question from same listener, Tal. Is there a player that you liked, although his stats didn't back it up, and you were alone in liking him? I can tell you a little bit about Tal. Tal is an amateur scouter. You know, he really likes the college game, and he really likes picking players. So he always brags about his picks, and then he picks everyone. So it doesn't really he picks all the college players, and then he will hit one or two. So
I don't know. You know, I was a big fan. I remember like Cam Payne coming out of the draft. I mean, I thought he would be, you know, maybe a version of like what CJ McCollum does. And he, you know, he obviously hasn't panned out anywhere close to that, but, you know, but he's also kind of remade his career and found a way to stick a little bit in Phoenix. Cause he can score the ball. He's a pretty gifted shooter, scorer, but I'd say overall, you know, I was pretty wrong about him. Who else? I mean, there's been so many.
I don't
think
Tal will like your answer because he's a Phoenix fan. So,
yeah, I don't know. I gotta go back.
I really don't understand what Phoenix did, because they brought Chris Paul on the one hand, and then they have Tyrese Halliburton, and they pick a power forward. They needed someone for Chris Paul to christen. So,
yeah,
that was a strange move.
Yeah, I definitely didn't love Jalen Smith by any means. But, yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, like I said, I mean, Bennett, I think, had a lot of talent still, even though it didn't pan out. I mean, who else? I'll get back to Todd, you said?
Todd.
Tal? Okay. I'll get back to him about that.
I'll remind you.
Yeah.
Okay. Brian, it's been very nice talking to you. Our listeners can find you at Scout with Brian in Twitter. And also that's the name of your YouTube channel where you upload videos weekly.
Yep.
And you have a podcast?
Yeah. Yep. Also just the Scout with Brian podcast. So again, pretty easy to find if you just type in Scout with Brian, Brian with a Y, anywhere, you'll pretty much find my stuff.
Okay, I enjoyed talking to you. I hope my English wasn't very bad.
Very good. much better than my Hebrew.
You have to say something now.
My Hebrew name's Baruch. That's about all I know at this point. I knew enough to get through my bar mitzvah, but since then I've forgotten everything.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's been a pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you very much. And well, hopefully we'll have a great season ending and a very good playoffs.
Yeah. No, thank you for having me. Definitely enjoyed it. And hopefully Denny continues to improve a little bit and keep the country happy. And hopefully.
If you want to find followers in Israel, you have to make a video about Danny.
I covered him a little bit in my if they go to my channel and go to my, I did a Wizards season preview. I kind of had a little my scouting report on him in there a little bit. So there's a little video there. But
if you want the Israelis to like you, you have to say only good things. So just a warning.
Okay, got it.
And, well, you started good because you don't like Scott Brooks, same as us. So that's good.
Yeah. Hopefully,
thanks, Brian.
Coach next year. Thank you again. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks.